News Talk 1450 KFIZ. Welcome back in on a Friday morning. Hour number two continues this morning with Behind the Badge with the Fond du Lac County Sheriff's Office. And joining us is the head man himself, Fond du Lac County Sheriff Ryan Walchman, on a Friday morning. Sheriff, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. I am well. How are you?
Doing well. It's glad it's Friday. Looks like a pretty good weekend weather-wise. And, you know, Memorial Day weekend's almost here. Summer season's almost here. So things are looking up, that's for sure.
It is. Things are greening up, and the temperature is starting to feel like summer, too, which is good because it was just, about a week ago, we were still having snow flurries and little ice pellets falling from the sky. But we're looking to much better forecasts here coming in the days to come.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, lots to talk about. We check in with you check in with us, I guess you should, a couple times a year to update us on different things going on with the sheriff's office and give us some updates as it relates to state and national headlines. And I know those are going to be touched on here in our conversation here this morning. But sheriff's office busy as always. And boy, we've had a lot of press releases coming our way here at the station with a lot of incidents happening. And I know a couple different incidents recently with the sheriff's office that they've been involved in where some deputies have been injured in the line of duty. So why don't you kind of recap for us what the first, four and a half months of the year have been like for the sheriff's office when it comes to dealing with the things we deal with on a day-to-day basis?
Sure, and a lot of the things, I wanted to talk about today they're interrelated, and I'll start with it is National Police Week, and the community is, very much supportive of what we do and very much likes to show their support for law enforcement. So we've gotten a lot of great comments and messages and cards and things like that over the course of the week, and we certainly appreciate that. But it's National Peace Officers Memorial Day is actually May 15th every year, so that's tomorrow. But we celebrated the memorial yesterday at Hamilton Park and had a really nice ceremony there where we remember the fallen and those that have died in the line of duty protecting their communities. And that kind of relates to where some of the significant things that we've been dealing with and how the deputies that are out on patrol every single day never know what they're going to be faced with, never know, what's next, what the next call is going to be, what the next traffic stop might bring, what the next person they have in contact with, what that person's intent is, whether or not it's to harm the officer, cooperate with the officer, flee the officer. We've had some very significant incidents that we've handled here in just the last few months, and this isn't necessarily uncommon or unusual. We do take, a lot of serious calls every year, a lot of critical incidents every year, and it's the kind of the third prong to that that is related to a topic of discussion in a lot of the media and just in a lot of the country right now is police reform and police reform bills and police policy and use of force policies and things like that. So this is all kind of interrelated among all three of those things, and that's why I wanted to kind of take some examples of what we've been dealing with here the last few months, the dangers of the job, and again reflecting on National Police Week and those losing their life in the line of duty, and then also how some of those things apply to our policies and procedures and police reform. But so I'll go back to March 9th as I highlight some of these more significant calls. And we had a high-speed chase, and ultimately that chase ended at Highway 49 and 175 just into Dodge County. But the chase started on the east side of Fond du Lac on the bypass near Johnson Street, a car going in the 90s. A deputy tried to stop him for speeding, and then the chase ensued and ended, like I said, just north of La Mira. And little did the deputies involved in the chase know it at the time during the chase, but at the end of it, they utilized the pit maneuver to effectively take that vehicle out of service, get them off the road. The car slid into the ditch and got stuck in the mud. And then a standoff ensued, and the suspect driving the car pulled a large butcher knife out. And when I say large, I mean like a large butcher, butcher knife, probably a foot-long blade or so, and grabbed the woman that was in the passenger seat, kind of pulled her back into the car when she tried to jump out of the car, And then as the standoff ensued, the armed standoff ensued, he actually turned around into the back seat and pulled a baby out of a car seat that nobody knew was in the back seat because you couldn't see the baby, and used that baby as a human shield, placing the baby up in front of his face between the officers that were up on the highway. And, you know, he in the driver's seat of that car, and it turned into a standoff, and we called our SWAT team right away to resolve this incident. And one of our deputies that was on scene as a patrol deputy is also a SWAT negotiator, so I happened to be on the scene of that standoff very early on in the incident, even before we knew the baby was in the back seat. So I was there minutes after this chase came to an end. I just happened to be coincidentally in that area. And so I said to the negotiator, I said, "Carve you out of patrol. You are now our SWAT negotiator." Long before the SWAT team even got there, you need to, you know, start negotiating. And Deputy Jordan Beam was the negotiator, and he started those communications. He started the de-escalation. He started, you know, the use of force here was, you know, at that critical level where there's, you know, the use of force was justified, but all of these things that, you know, the training kicks in, the SWAT negotiator is there, the verbalization techniques, the de-escalation techniques, all of those things were utilized, and he ended up not threatening the baby directly with the weapon. Otherwise, you know, he would have forced our hand to use deadly force to stop him if he would have been threatening that baby directly. He didn't threaten the girlfriend in the car either. He was just holding the knife basically up or to his own neck, threatening himself and threatening self-harm. But through the course of those negotiations, the deputy successfully and peacefully resolved it after a couple hours, and Deputy Beam, Negotiator Beam, transferred into the command post when the SWAT team arrived, and continued his negotiations, and ultimately was the one that that talked him out of the car, talked the suspect out of the car peacefully, and peacefully resolved that very critical incident. And so all of those things, again, that we talk about, the training, the de-escalation techniques, policy, use of force, you know, worked almost flawlessly that day, you know, and ended up exactly how we wanted it, which was in a peaceful resolution with nobody getting injured, nobody getting hurt. And then fast forward just a couple weeks to March 21st. We had a up in the town of Taycheta in St. Peter, a gentleman fired a handgun at his girlfriend in the midst of an argument with her, and then she was able to flee the house. She wasn't hit by the gunfire, but fled the house, called 911 as deputies were arriving and setting up on the house and speaking with the victim off-site. A vehicle pulled out of the driveway, and so deputies followed the vehicle and effectuated a traffic stop on it. And the driver of the car was not the suspect, but was rather the suspect's friend. And then through the course of interviewing him during the traffic stop, the deputies were led to believe the suspect was in the trunk of the car hiding. And so they attempted to verbally communicate with him, get him to come out of the trunk. He refused. He didn't. And ultimately, the deputies tactically opened the trunk from the outside, and the suspect jumped up out of the trunk with a handgun in his hand to his head. And the deputies attempted negotiations. They retreated. They set up a, you know, tactical perimeter and tried negotiating with him. And ultimately, unfortunately, that suspect took his own life in front of those deputies on the side of the highway there. But again, you know, it's not just a physically traumatic job in the sense that we're assaulted physically sometimes, but it's that mental trauma, the things you see, the things you deal with in this career and in this job, and how those things can change you and, you know, change your decision-making processes and change your view on things sometimes. And we go through great extent to make sure deputies that see these tragedies occur in front of them get the follow-up help they need. We do critical incident stress management debriefings. We have chaplains at our office. We have a peer support team at our office where you can reach out confidentially to your fellow coworkers. We work with a mental health provider that deputies can talk to, and that also guides these sessions, these critical stress debriefings. And so, you know, we see a lot and we feel a lot. So it's not just, like I said, the physical trauma, but can be the mental trauma and things we're exposed to. Then fast forward another week later, we have the unfortunate canoeing incident on Lake Winnebago, where two gentlemen went out fishing on the canoe and somehow ended up out on Lake Winnebago. They were originally in Lakeside Park in the river channel there, which was safe, but then once they got out on Lake Winnebago and the 40-45 mile an hour wind gusts you know, pushed them out onto the lake, and deputies responded like we always do to those emergencies and jumped on the boat and headed out in some of the worst conditions they had ever experienced on Lake Winnebago in an attempt to rescue the two victims. And unfortunately, both of them ended up drowning, and we spent the subsequent days that week searching for their bodies and ultimately did locate both of them and, you know, were able to return them to their families for proper burial. But again, not how we want an incident to turn out, but you know, the men and women here and the things they do and are willing to do and place their own lives and safety at risk to help others, this was a prime example of that as well. And, you know, a dangerous situation for them to be out in, but did everything we could to try to rescue them. Then a couple weeks after that, back in April, on April 19th, we had a subject from Oshkosh jump out of a moving vehicle on Highway 26 north of Rosendale, and the car was going about 45 miles an hour at the time when he was in a argument with the girl who was driving, and he just jumped out of the car and ended up injured and kind of covered in road rash. And she turned around, picked him back up. The argument continued. She drove a little further down the road, and he ended up starting to jump. He was going to jump out again, so she was able to get the car stopped and left him out, and he got out of the car, and we started getting 911 calls in the middle of the day. This was, you know, broad daylight, middle of the week. We started getting 911 calls of a subject that was covered in blood and road rash and stumbling down Highway 26. So of course we don't know the background to it. It's just passerbys calling 911, relaying their observations, and so deputies arrive and try to help him and try to talk to him, and he's darting in and out of traffic, and Highway 26 is a very busy state highway, main thoroughfare. And so one of the deputies went to go hands-on with him and get him detained and get him safe, because he's running around traffic and cars are slamming on their brakes and swerving, and the subject resisted, and the deputy went to, like I said, attempt to handcuff him, and in the course of the struggle in doing so, that deputy's knee was blown out, and he has very significant leg and knee injuries, a broken bone in his leg, and needs a pretty major surgery here coming up, and will be down and out for probably 8 to 12 months. And so, you know, we talked about the mental trauma and those calls earlier, and then you get a call like this where you sustain some physical trauma that's going to be potentially a life-changing event, you know, just trying to help somebody that was obviously not thinking straight when you're jumping out of a car going highway speeds and then darting in and out of traffic, and we're trying to help this gentleman, and this deputy ends up injured with quite significant injuries, and we certainly hope he fully recovers and that the surgery is fully effective and he doesn't have any lasting issues, but you know, only time will tell. But he is, like I said, down and out for 8 to 12 months now because of that one incident and that one struggle trying to help somebody. Yeah. And then the last one I wanted to mention was a drunk driver crashed his car up near Van Dyne back in April, on April 25th, and deputies responded, and the suspect had fled the scene into a wooded area and was hiding on those deputies, and didn't know exactly why he fled the scene, you know, at the time, but later we learned it was because he was intoxicated. But when deputies located him, a struggle ensued. The suspect had to be tased. The suspect punched one of our deputies in the face several times. That deputy sustained multiple lacerations, and like your head often does when there's an injury. It bleeds a lot, and that deputy had a lot of blood coming off of his face, and his uniform and clothing was covered in his own blood after that struggle. But you know, this was a drunk driver, and that was the only reason he had fled, was he had crashed his car, you know, drunk driving. And again, you just never know what you're going to face, and what kind of physical and or mental trauma you might sustain in the line of duty. And so our deputies go through great extents to you know, keep to the bare absolute minimum of the use of force that needs to be used to effectuate an arrest, and the use of force needed to properly and appropriately keep themselves and others safe while still taking care of business and doing what they need to do to get a person who's not complying under control. And you know, these are, like I said, just a couple months here of examples, you know, and this is just a microcosm of what we deal with annually over a year's time. And you know, these are things that we don't necessarily talk about. These are things that the public doesn't necessarily even want to know about. They pay us to do a job that, you know, and deal with things that a lot of people don't even want to know about, much less hear or see or experience or witness themselves. But I think it's important the public knows about these things, because especially this day and age, with all of the scrutiny of law enforcement and the use of force and the policies and the different things, topics, you know, that are out there and getting a lot of coverage right now, the public needs to hear these things and hear how we handle them and the great restraint that's used and the injuries, even using great restraint in the force that is used to effectuate a legal arrest. We're getting hurt, we're getting injured, and we can't, you know, it's easy for a legislator at the federal level or at the state level to want to clamp down and make use of force so restrictive that, you know, because it sounds good on paper, it sounds good in theory, but when you go and you do that and you erode law enforcement's ability to protect themselves and ultimately protect the community and protect others that are not engaged in criminal behavior, if you erode law enforcement's ability to do that, you're not going to have a safer society. You're going to have more people resisting arrest, more people assaulting officers, more people trying to capitalize on knowing that the officer is probably second-guessing whether or not they can use force, second-guessing whether or not they should use force. And in the meantime, these suspects are taking advantage of that hesitation or taking advantage of these laws if they're too restrictive, you know, that are passed. And we see that with high-speed chases. You mentioned you get our press releases. You see all of these high-speed chases. We have had more chases in the last year or two than we've ever had annually before. And I think that's an example of people's lack of respect for the law and law enforcement. And they think, man, you know, these cops are on the defensive right now. The pressure's on them to minimize use of force and minimize what they do and minimize their ability to keep people safe. If I flee, they're going to just stop chasing me, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get away and go on to commit the next crime. And, you know, these chases are an example of that lack of respect for the law enforcement and authority. And, you know, the assaults on our officers are examples of people that we deal with on a routine basis who want to hurt us and are willing to hurt us and willing to face, you know, the risk that they take, you know, and the force that might be used against them to get them to stop. And like I said, they all kind of interact with each other, and it's something the community needs to know about, and you know, people need to hear about, because these are topics that are being discussed heavily in Washington and heavily in Madison with these police reform bills and policy changes and use of force changes. So
I wanted to get your take real quickly before we let you go. We've gone on for quite a while here, but all good information for people to know about. As you said, the state Senate recently this week, Ryan passing the first bills addressing police reform, and you mentioned it briefly that this is something happening at the state level, something happening at the national level too. And just reading a little bit about the bills that were passed in the Senate this week. Looks like a new grant program for police, requiring police to post use of force policies, gathering data on use of force incidents, and I know there's some other provisions in there too. And from what it sounds like, you and I were talking off the air, there are parts of this that the sheriff's office is already doing. Is that correct?
Right. That's an important note. You know, I talked about a lot of the things that there are definitely a lot of good things in these bills, and some agencies may not be compliant with some of these things, and they are good practices and best practices. And I'm proud to say that we're always trying to be on the cutting edge. We're always evaluating our policies and revamping them and adjusting them and adapting them to the times. And we're compliant with these things. The governor a few weeks ago issued an executive order with it was roughly 8 or 9 different mandates for the state agencies, and we took a look at those mandates for the state law enforcement agencies, and we complied already and had been compliant for a long time with all of them. Our policies and procedures are up to date. We're constantly evaluating them, and it's a lot of these things, they're good discussions, and they're certainly things that should be happening. I'm not saying all of the police reform bill packages are bad. There are certainly components of them that are concerning, and those are the things the community needs to be aware of, and that we are working and advocating to not restrict our ability to keep our community safe. But there are a lot of good that is coming out of these discussions, and a lot of things that, like I said, the bills do have a lot of good components to them as well. And we certainly, like I said, strive for excellence, and we're constantly evaluating. It's a living, breathing document. Our policies are not stagnant and old and never updated or revised. And like you had said, you'd mentioned the use of force policy specifically. We have that on our website, www.fdlsheriff.com. You go right to the homepage. Our use of force policy is there for anybody and everybody to read. Also next to that is our body camera policy. We've implemented body cameras this year. Everybody's getting trained up and issued one, and I wear one. The patrol deputies all wear one. Everybody in between wears one. And we're capturing more video evidence than ever before. And it's just accountability, transparency, for all those reasons. And our body camera policy is also online there for everybody to see as well. Those are two big important ones that I know our community is concerned about, and certainly we welcome them to go ahead and read them and see how we do what we do and why we do it, what guides us in our use of force. To work our way through these critical incidents.
Excellent. Fond du Lac County Sheriff Ryan Walchbitt, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.